Parshas Shlach Lecha Anoshim really does not start in Parshas Shlach. It starts in Parshas Balotcha. And the only way to learn, the only way to understand what's going on with Shlach Lecha Anoshim when he says yourself, Shlach Lecha Anoshim, and Rashi says L'tovascha L'anoscha, you should do it for yourself. And then that first Rashi of Lominis, Parshas Meraglim, Parshas Miriam, why is it connected to Parshas Miriam? Because she spoke Lashon Hara, so therefore they should have learned from that. They should have said, oh, well, we can't speak Lashon Hara, but they didn't. They messed it up. We're out of Eretz Yisrael. And it's one of those things where if we would have been there, Mashiach would have come, Beis HaMikdash would have been rebuilt, it would have been all beautiful, and everything would have been happy. But because we messed it up again, yet again, we got messed over, did not go into Eretz Yisrael. All right, let's try to figure that out. What in the world happened that made them go this bad? We know the Egel Azov. We'll keep that out of here for now, but it'll come back. It always comes back. And then we'll keep that out. We'll keep that all the way over. Eldad and Medad came along. They prophesied. They made a crazy prophecy. They said, Moshe Meis Yoshua Machnes. The Mimayim. Minamayim is Yisiyu. Very good. Mimayim is... They were Machna. They made B'machane. They were Machna Nunhei. They took it out and they said Mimayim. That Moshe Meis Yoshua Machnes. As soon as they said that, Aaron and Miriam decided to darshan out with one another what the reason was for Moshe Rabbeinu not entering Eretz Yisrael. Why couldn't Moshe enter Eretz Yisrael? Why could that not be? So they started darshaning to one another. Miriam came up with a drasha. Al odos isha kushis asher lokach. He had married an isha kushis. There's a Rashbam. It's quoted by Josephus. Yaakov Ruveni quotes it down. There's Dasa Kanim in the Rush. They all say that the isha kushis refers to a woman who he had married when he was king of Kush. Told us of Moshe Rabbeinu. There's a sefer called Sefer Told Us Moshe Rabbeinu. He married a Kushi woman when he became king of Kush. However, he never consummated the marriage. Because he never consummated the marriage, he was able to be Moshe Ominu Mishamish Bamarim. He wasn't able to rot. But he wasn't able to go into Eretz Yisrael because he had married an Isha Kushis. He had married her. How'd they find out about that? The Isha Kushis came back. That's the Yonas. It seems to be from the Yonas Menuzil. The Isha Kushis came back and she said, I'm married to Moshe Rabbeinu. And everybody's sitting there like, what? He's married to an Isha Kushis? So Miriam comes along and makes a drasha. And she says, the reason why is because, let's compare. Yaakov Avinu did not marry Timnah or go anywhere near Timnah, who was future, the future mother of Amalek. Because of that, he was allowed to be buried in Eretz Yisrael and he did not rot. Yosef Atzadik, although he had not been with Eishes Potiphar, he did have Shechva Zera Levatala. Because he had Shechva Zera Levatala from those 10 fingers that he put into the ground, he was not able to keep himself from rotting. His bones were brought in. However, he did get to be buried inside Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu, because he married a goyish woman, a woman who was a goy, even though he had never been with her, he had never consummated the marriage, but because he had ended up marrying her, that was good enough to not allow him to be in Eretz Yisrael. That was her drasha. And she said it over to Aaron. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's Lashon Hara. You can't speak such things about Moshe Rabbeinu. And from there we learn that women can never learn Torah. I'm joking. That's like, whatever. But it's what, by the way, everyone was really quick on that one. Like I'm joking. Like okay, anyway. We have that. The idea is supposed to be like this. Moshe and Aaron had one chance to bring it back. We know that Lashon Hara kills three. It kills the teller, the one who hears it, and the one they talk about. So Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam were proclaimed to have a death warrant on them. 5 years ago, in the first Tzfas trip, the Beis Yisrael went up to Tzfas, happened to be around there, and the Shmuel Orbach happened to be in one of the shuls. He was staying by the Arizal shul. I got up early, went to the Arizal shul, and I asked him after davening. It was Parshas Chukas, just like this year, works out well. Parshas Chukas, I asked him, why was Miriam not Zocha to be buried in Eretz Yisrael? Moshe and Aaron, it says in the Parsha, okay, Meimariva, it says they weren't buried in Eretz Yisrael because of that. Miriam, what happened to Miriam that Miriam wasn't able to be buried in Eretz Yisrael? What did she do to not merit being buried in Eretz Yisrael? I asked him. He asked me to get a Medrash Rabbah for him, so I was Meshamish for Shmuel, score. I was able to do that, and then he didn't tell me an answer in the end. I wrote it to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Rav Chaim Kanievsky did not tell me an answer in the end. It got around Chicago, where I first gave an answer from Chicago. It wasn't the answer I was looking for, but I did find an answer eventually. Chassam Sofer, this is an awesome answer. Lashon Hara kills three. And because of this Lashon Hara, which was done by Dibor, what they had to do is the following. It kills three, but it's only a drush. What it ends up doing is, it gives you a chance to fix everything up. If the Lashon Hara is for nothing, and it ends up messing things over even worse, the Lashon Hara does absolutely nothing for a person, then the people who end up messing it up even worse later on, they'll be punished, as well as those first people who spoke Lashon Hara. Because their Lashon Hara did absolutely nothing for anybody. Nobody learned a lesson from it. But if they spoke Lashon Hara, and everybody else sees from that, we cannot speak Lashon Hara. Never, ever speak Lashon Hara. Look what happened to Miriam. then that means that Miriam's Lashon Hara was worth saying. Because even though she spoke Lashon Hara, it was a bad thing, but it taught all of Bnei Yisrael a massive lesson. And if they learn that lesson, then from then on, they're never going to have any problems with Lashon Hara. They'll be perfect with their Dibor. So Miriam did something, call it a chait, in order to improve all of Klal Yisrael, to do a tikkun for all of Klal Yisrael. So Moshe had a massive, massive dilemma in this week's parsha. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to him, send in the Meraglim, but don't do it for me. Because I'm telling you, Moshe, and Moshe knew this, they're going to screw it up. They're going to be messed up, something bad is going to happen, and you're never going to be able to get into Eretz Yisrael. But Shlach Lecha Anashim, do it for yourself. Why? Because you want the tikkun. You, Aaron, and Miriam are going to die unless they learn from this Lashon Hara of Miriam, and they learn not to speak Lashon Hara. If they don't learn from it, you're all going to die. But if you do learn from it, if everybody learns from it and they decide, forget it, we're not going to speak Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael, then that Lashon Hara of Miriam had a tikkun, everything's all good. Everything should be perfectly fine, and everybody will be able to enter Eretz Yisrael. Moshe, Miriam, Aaron, everybody will be perfectly fine. That was the idea behind that type of a tikkun. So Shlach Lecha Anashim is for yourself, and that's why it's put next to Parshas Miriam. And it wasn't a selfish sort of a thing where Moshe Rabbeinu was like, I have to live. He knew what was going to happen if he lived. Moshe is Mashiach. He could have been the Mashiach. He would have brought the Beis HaMikdash had he been let inside. But if he didn't go in with Miriam, if Miriam would have stayed outside in Aram, would have been stayed outside because of that Lashon Hara, and he would have gone in through some tikkun for himself, which would have been Meimariva. If this Lashon Hara did not happen, if this chance was not given over to Bnei Yisrael, who knows what would have happened? Who knows what would have happened? We have no idea. Moshe Rabbeinu was given the chance, Shlach Lecha Anashim, to make everything work out. A massive tikkun, massive everything, so let's see. However, the Sultan's going to do everything he can to mess it all up. He's got to make sure that this doesn't happen, because all he's supposed to do is make sure the Mashiach doesn't come until the very, very end of time when the Kadosh Baruch Hu has to force it in. So the Sultan's going all out to do everything he can. So what happens? Lots of strange, strange lashonos. You think Moshe Rabbeinu was just sitting there and he's like, Yeshua, come here for a second. Let me give you a yud. Where did he pull that out from? He's like, here, let me cut it out. Let me stick it in your forehead. So where did he get this yud from? And where in the world, like, what does that mean? Like, he only went up to Yeshua. He knows everybody's going to mess this up. He's looking at every single one of the Meraglim and he's saying, each one of you is going to mess it up. So I'm giving the yud to Yeshua. It's like, come on, well, why not give it to everybody? Give an extra letter to every single one of the Shvatim, each one of the Meraglim, then everything will be fine. Why didn't he do that? He did do that. Lots of weird Lashonos. They check out, Isha Chod, Lamate Avosov, one man. This is one of those, like, you know, where you come into the Parsha and you're just like, Asher Ani Nosen Levnei Yisrael that I gave, they'll spy out the land of Canaan that I gave to Bnei Yisrael, one man. One man. It's like, what are these? Like, and you can see here, like a ye olde English place, like somebody getting up there and being like, one man, you heard me correctly, one man, that like gets up there. But no, there's something with that Isha Chod. And then it says, Lamate Avosim, and it says, Anashim Roshe B'nei Yisrael Hema. What is a Rosh B'nei Yisrael? Roshe Alfi Yisrael, I can hear. Roshe Chamishim of B'nei Yisrael. The people were the Sar Chamishim, which is who these guys were, according to Rashi. That I can hear. But Roshe B'nei Yisrael? What does that have to do with anything? And then, Lamate Ruvain, why do we care which shade that each one was in? And then finally, Lamate Menashe, it says right before Menashe, it says Lamate Yosef, Lamate Menashe. Usually Yosef goes with the first tribe that's mentioned. Should have been Ephraim. Should have been Lamate Yosef, Lamate Ephraim. What's with this? See, Arizal says this, quoted by the Yalkut Ruvaini. Awesome answer. Moshe Rabbeinu knew that he had to put Nitzotzos, the Neshamos, of each one of the Shvatim into every single one of the Meraglim. Every Meragel that went inside Eretz Yisrael had a different neshama of one of the Shvatim with them. Meaning, the first one, which was Reuven, Shamua ben Zakur, had Ruav with him. Reuven was with him. Reuven's neshama was with him the entire time. Shimon was with Shapha ben Chori. Yehuda was with Kalev ben Yifuna, and so on and so forth. Each one of them had a Sheva with them that was Misgalga within them, said they'd be helped out, that Sheva could do something for them, so they'll be helped out. Kalev had the biggest problem. Kalev had to go to Hebron, and had to go bow down on the Kibra Avosav. Why? The Gemara Makos and Daf Yud Aleph says that Yehuda, his bones were rattling in the grave all there in the Midbar. He was in Cherem. He was much, much weaker than he could have been. So Kalev knew he was the weakest among everybody. He was going to be the weakest one. So as soon as he got a chance to go to the Mate Avosav, he ran over to the Mate Avosav and he said to the Kibra Avosav and said to them, help me, somebody help me. But Yaakov, you know, already knew that Kalev was going to do this. And he had already said in Parshas Vayechi, Besodom Al Tavo Nafshi, I don't want to go anywhere anywhere near the Meraglim. I'm not coming anywhere near them. So Yaakov said, I'm not going with them. But Eliezer Eved Avram, who is sitting outside of the cave, look at the Gemara in Baba Basra, Nun Chesem and Aleph. Eliezer Eved Avram sits outside of the cave in Maros Machpelah, sat there and said, Kalev, I'll go with you. And I'll take Metat, Metatron, not from Transformers, although the movie is supposed to be awesome. Oh my God, whatever, I have no idea. But yeah. Either way, they just told me twice. They called over Metat, the king archangel of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who went down with Kalev, that no matter what happened, Kalev would not be able to be messed up. It's one of the reasons why later on, by Yas Kalev, Kalev was able to silence everybody, not Yoshua. Yoshua is like, wait guys, wait, no. Don't go anywhere. But Kalev was able to have a voice where Metat like called him out, and was just like, stop it! He was able to scream and able to make everybody there, all 600,000 men, just shut up and be like, oh, what? What is that? It sounds like an angel. Metat was with him the entire time. That's Kalev. That's Kalev. That's number one. Not Menashe and Ephraim. Menashe and Ephraim didn't go with. So with Menashe went Yosef. Yosef went with Menashe because they were the two people. Yosef went with Menashe himself. But Ephraim, who had Yeshua ben Nun, had a big problem. He had an issue. Who's going to go with him? So Moshe Rabbeinu pulled down Levi. That's the Yud. The Meister of Bnei Yisrael. That Yud stands for the Meister of Bnei Yisrael. The tenth, the tithe of Bnei Yisrael is always shaved at Levi. Levi is the guy that's given over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu forever, and they do the whole thing. You take out all the Bechors, and you do Shimon Levi, Yehudi, Yisachar, Zvulun, etc. Naphtali, Asher, Naphtali, Asher, Binyamin, and then you go again, it's Reuven, Shimon, Levi. Shimon, Levi. So Levi's going to be the 10th person altogether. He's considered the Meister. And aside from that, don't think to yourself, what's the connection between Yeshua and Levi? How is Yeshua connected to Levi? Yeshua was the Talmud Muvaka Moshe Rabbeinu. What happens when you have a Talmud Muvaka Moshe Rabbeinu? You have a Talmud Muvaka of anybody. What's that guy considered? Talmud is considered like he gave birth to him. It's like he gave birth to him, so it's like his son. So it's Moshe's son. Moshe's son is Moshe's from Shevet Levi. Thus, it works out perfectly. And aside from that, there's a Rashi Tevis. Vayikra Moshe Lehoshea Ben Nun Yehoshua. The first letters of those words is Ben Mi Levi. He's a Ben Mi Levi. So thus, he was able to get Shevet Levi with him. When he was called Yehoshua, he got Levi with him. So Levi was able to go with him the entire time. And then, because they didn't mess up, the Chayu Mina Anashim. Levi, Yehuda, as well as, later on, obviously, Metat and Eliezer Eved Avram, stayed with Kalev and Yehoshua for the rest of their lives. They were Chayu Mina Anashim. They were alive from those people. They always stayed with them for the rest of the time. But it didn't work. And Hashem almost left them as soon as they started sinning. Why in the world did they get messed over with? And the Neshamas of the Shevatim within you, how in the world could you get messed up like that? Moshe knew that Eretz Yisrael is 400 parsas by 400 parsas. So he figured, okay, you can walk 10 parsas in a day. But these guys are not going to go 10 parsas in a day. You're going to walk as much as you can day and night in order to get through all of Eretz Yisrael. So that means if you're going to walk 20 parsas day and night, 20 parsas a day altogether, there's 400 parsas altogether. So how many days are you going to have to take? 20 days. 20 days is perfect. The Meraglim left on Chof Tes Sivan. They'll get back by Yud Ches Tam. And that'll be perfect. There won't be any of the 3 weeks in. And even though Shivas V'Tammuz will be there, what happened on Shivas V'Tammuz? Not everything all at once. Just I'll call on somebody.
There you go. Gemara somewhere, isn't it?
Tinus. The Egel Azov. The Egel Azov. So you need a mirror guy. So you have an Egel Azov that comes along. The Egel Azov comes along. That's why I told you you should have gone to the mirror. So Egel Azov. I probably give a shir. I was like, some shir today. I was like, Shivas V'Tammuz. The Egel Azov is done. You might need this for later on today. Just check. But either way. And the Egel Azov happened on that day. They weren't worried. And the reason why they weren't worried is because they thought to themselves, it's Yud Ches Tammuz. They're going to come back in time. Everything will be okay. But the Meraglim messed it up. They were too scared. They didn't go during the day. During the day, they hid in the trees. They hid under big shells of fruits. They wouldn't go anywhere during the day. They only walked at night. Because they only walked at night, they were only able to go 10 parsas a day. So it didn't take them 20 days, it took them 40 days. Because it took them 40 days, when did they come back? And Tisha B'Av, 3 weeks were involved the entire time. Out of the 40 days, 21 days were 21 days of the 3 weeks in which the Satan has a tremendous power. The Gemara Pesachim on Daf Kuf Yud goes through how the Satan has a crazy amount of power during those 3 weeks. And don't ask me why then over any other time. You guys know it yourselves. Think about what happens during the summer. The summer is the time when everybody just forgets, like, oh, you mean I'm supposed to get dressed in the morning? Just take a 45 bus up through Russia over there. Everybody somehow forgets. Oh my gosh, I completely forgot. I was supposed to put on clothes this morning. I completely forgot about it. And that's a time where the Satan becomes the strongest, where he becomes the harshest up against you. He starts giving you all the excuses in the world. He starts going up to you and he starts saying to you, yeah, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. It's sunny outside. God doesn't want you in an air-conditioned base medrash. Or, the Shiva didn't turn on the air conditioning. He doesn't want you to be inside the base medrash. It's one of those things. All of a something's sitting there. He's like, I can bottle now. Yeah, I'm fine. I got to get another drink of water. You just went. You've been to the bathroom 30 times today. You don't need another drink of water. You're fine. But yet, no. The substance's going up to you, and he's just saying, like, listen, you need the water. You need to drink. You need to have food. Just go across the street. There's pizza, for God's sake. They put it right across the street from you. Just go. Go. Do whatever you can. That's what the substance's going to do. And it's only now. It's not during the winter. During the winter, you're freezing. You want to stay inside. And even though, of course, it's still freezing in the basement, because that's when the air conditioning goes on. But still, it's like you sit there, and you're like, you don't want to go outside. You want to go to the place that's, like, the warmest, or the place where, like, you know, at least it might, it doesn't, well, whatever. I'm not even going into the smell. Like, let's just keep that out of here for now. But just, it's just one of those things where the Satan all of a sudden goes up against you, and he kicks you. He kicks you, and he says, what are you doing this for? That's what happened during those 21 days. They say, at the end of Rishon, it's by Yomim Yemei Bikuri Anavim. The days are the days of the ripening of the grapes. There's a bunch of different words. But the Anavim, according to the Gra, the Anavim stands for, by Yomim Yemei Bikuri Anavim, the last letters are Mem Yud Yud Mem. That stands for the Sam, the Satan, Sam Kel, Samach Mem, Aleph Lamed. Sam is the gematria of 100. That stands for, that's the Satan that went up against them. The Nitzut Shimshin, because I don't think I can give a shit without giving a Rav Shimshin Astropolio, goes ahead and says that Bikuri Anavim. Oh my gosh, that was classic. You know, it was worth coming just around. I'll see you later, guys. But anyway, it says, Vayomi Bikuri Anavim. Bikuri Anavim means the letters before Anavim. And Anavim, the letter before Ayin, is a Samach. I'm not going to even ask you guys. The letter before Nun is a Mem. The letter before a Bez is an Aleph. The letter before Mem is a Lamed. So that's Sam, Kel. You shouldn't say the whole name, by the way. Tommy Ben Hagim, it's all the way in the Likutim in the back. But regardless, there's Sam, Kel over there. This Sam was involved in everything over here. That's why Rashi says, Ba'osa Shah, Sherem Hayu. When they left, they were kosher. They were fine. They were good guys. Ba'osa Shah and Pasa Gimel, Rashi said they were fine. Only later on did they mess it up, because when the 3 weeks happened, and that's when the something got a hold of them, that's when he started punching them in the face and saying, you guys should mess it all up. And he started saying to each other, listen, we can't do this. Also remember, Yitzayim B'Tammuz, Shivasa B'Tammuz, the day it started was the Egel Azov. Egel Azov is always involved in everything. Compare 40 days to the Egel Azov, 40 days when they were walking inside the Midbar over here. Rosh Bnei Yisrael over here, and Nitna Rosh Ben Ashuva Mitzrayma, and also Asher Yelchu Lufaneinu, that they said by the Egel Azov, the Asher and the Rosh is backward. Ben Ashuva Mitzrayma, which we just said, and also that brought you out, Halucha Meret Mitzrayim. Everything in the Egel Azov is connected to what's going on over here. So this is supposed to be a massive tikkun for that as well. This could have been a tikkun for the Egel Azov if they would have done it correctly. Remember those backward nuns? The backward nuns in Baal Oscha, and everybody looks and you're just like, gosh, that's weird. You know, like, why in the world? You're just like, none. They're the wrong way. You just look at it, you're just like, why in the world would it be there? So the Baal Torah is an awesome board. Count 50 parshios beforehand, and you'll see it that it belongs in that parsha. That's awesome. That's the greatest word I've ever heard before in my life. Every year, just because, to Yossi Zion, I go through every pay in Samach, and I sit there for like 10 minutes just to count it up, and I'm just like, and how did I finish? I just do a little jig around the table, just like, yeah, that's awesome. It's the best board ever. Like, who counted that? Who would have said, like, oh, it belongs 50 parshios before? I was like, hey. It is. It works. By far, Baal Torah is awesome. Anyway, he wrote the tour also. He was good for that. I mean, regardless, the backwards nuns also have to do with this. The 50 also have to do with this. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but they were on the 50th level after right before they did the Egel Azov. They were on the 50th level of Tahara. They messed it up with the Egel Azov, and they brought themselves down. Because they brought themselves down to the Tumah, that's why we have to bring Sari Hamishim over here. Not the Sari Asaros, not the Sari Alafim, not the Sari Meos, not any of those. Dafka the Sari Hamishim, the Mila Takin. Those 50, that nun that was in the back, and we're also supposed to be attacking the Egel Azov, but the Sultan has crazy powers on that day. Convinced them of the following four claims. Following four claims. Number one, why not stay in the desert? It's awesome here. You have Mun. There is nothing greater than Mun. You do nothing else but learn all day long. You have no excuse to get up and go get a drink of water. No excuse to go to the bathroom. We can sit and learn all day long. Why do you want to go to Eretz Yisrael? You're going to have to fight a war. You're going to have to go up and start plowing the land. You're going to have to start working the land. Why would you do that? Don't bother doing that. Stay in the Midbar. It's awesome here. They started being convinced of that argument and started saying to themselves, you know what? It's true. Why should we go into Eretz Yisrael? Yeah, sure, it's awesome. Great land. Great grapes. Huge grapes. They're awesome. Massive. We're going to see. Huge. That's great. And you can get drunk pretty easily off those grapes, I'll bet. No longer do you need those Thursday nights. Regardless, what they were saying, it's such an obvious claim that they should have said, like, what do I need the Midbar for? What in the world? I'm sorry?
Were they set up for Mashiach coming?
In a way, yes. That's what they were claiming. What do we need it yet for? Let's stay out here. We can learn for years and years and years.
You're supposed to go into Eretz Yisrael, right?
Yes.
Right. So once they got there, Mashiach was going
to
come, right?
Well, Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to be the Mashiach.
Right, so,
and the Beis Hamikdash would have fallen down.
And then they would have had the Promised Land.
Depends if it's Mashiach ben Yosef or Mashiach ben David. Mashiach ben David wouldn't have been through Moshe Rabbeinu. And if it was Mashiach ben Yosef, which doesn't have to be from Yosef, but if it is Mashiach ben Yosef, by the way, there's a connection right there. Levi and Ephraim, there is a connection between them. But either way, if it would have been Mashiach ben Yosef, then everything would have worked out. Then you're right. Things would have been great, but they still needed the eventual Tchias HaMesim and Mashiach ben David to come. So who knows how long that would have lasted. They would have had a third Beis HaMikdash that would have been there forever, but that doesn't mean that you're impervious to sin. You still might have sinned. That's what America does to you also, by the way. Impervious. What a big word. Anyway, that's at least four syllables. You can't get that anywhere else, you know? All right, anyway, that's one of those things. But 100%, you are correct. But that's what he did. The Sfas HaMis said, well, we got these anonym around. We got a Be'er Shel Miriam. Whenever you need to go to the mikvah, the thing just looked like a tiny little stream. You would jump in and be like, ah, oh, I'm drowning. No, I'm not. I'm here. Don't worry. It was the most awesome river you could think of in your life. It tasted like everything. The mum tastes like everything. And we're just learning all day. There's no excuses. Why should we go anywhere? Why bother going into Eretz Yisrael? A great claim. And it messed them over. Number one. Number two. Moshe Rabbeinu was just told, we were just told by Eldad and Medad, that Moshe Meis Yoshua Machnes. Moshe's not going to bring us in. We want Moshe Rabbeinu. And they had a whole cheer. We want Moshe. And they probably picketed outside. That old thing. Why would they want Moshe to die? We'd rather learn Torah from him. We don't want to learn Torah from Yoshua. Yoshua at the time was not very well known yet. Nobody really knew who he was. He was number five in the Meraglim. He was not very well known. So they said, why should we go to Yoshua? Let's bring about Moshe. I still want Moshe. A great claim. Number three. Their gaiva got to them a little bit, according to the stipler. That was Tzfaras Yonason, by the way, Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz. The stipler says their gaiva got to them a little bit. This is a strange word. But they were able to go ahead, and once they saw what was going to happen, that they were going to Eretz Yisrael, they thought, we're not going to be leaders anymore. We're not going to be anybody. Everybody's going to go to do their own thing and do whatever, and they're not going to see us anymore. We want to be something. We're here to do something in this world. Why not say our job in this world is to be the Sari Chamishin, to be in charge? That was number three. And number four, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld. Check? Okay, only one guy with a Sugi Kippa. That's okay. But Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, you have to read about Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld in order to understand this word. I know 17 tape records, somehow this is going to get out and I'm going to get in trouble for this. I don't care. But the fact is, Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld came along and said that he saw the secular Zionists that were going to enter Eretz Yisrael. And he said, because of those secular Zionists that were going to enter Eretz Yisrael and have nothing to do with Torah and Mitzvos, he'd rather not let... The Meraglim said, we'd rather not go into Eretz Yisrael. We'd rather stay outside because we don't want those people going in. Ouch! Except, Hashem punished the Meraglim for that thought. Which is a problem. He explains. It's a great little piece. I think it's on page 354 in Garden of Jerusalem, which, by the way, there are certain books that are required reading when you're in yeshiva. Garden of Jerusalem by Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld is number one. Avram ben Avram, the story about Rav Avram ben Avram, is number two. Number three, Akiva, written by Marcus Lohman. Best book ever. Best book ever. It's absolutely the best book. Those three books, if you don't read them, you stink. They're the best books you'll ever read. I'm telling you, you won't get bored reading those books. Awesome. One thing after the other. Avram ben Avram, coolest man who has ever lived ever. Cooler than the Grah. And you'd think no one can be cool in the Grah. He was cooler than the Grah. It's unbelievable. The Grah even said to him at the end of his life, or Shiva talks about it all the time, said to him at the end of his life, I'll be willing to do Kabbalah in order to take you out from jail. And he's like, no. No! Get let him! Just see him do it! There's no one cooler. There's absolutely no one cooler. It's absolutely crazy. Anyway, the Chassam Sofer says another thing. Whenever they looked at the Meraglim, all they saw, whenever the Meraglim looked anywhere, all they saw was the problems and not the potential. This is the Chassam Sofer. This is an unbelievable thing. Big grapes. Instead of thinking to themselves, these grapes are awesome. Look how huge these grapes are. We're never going to need more than one grape to make massive barrels of wine. They thought to themselves, uh-oh, what's going to happen on Motzei Shabbos in the middle of town? That's all they're thinking. What's going to happen? These people are going to get drunk on tiny little grapes. These grapes are too big. People are going to mess it up. They're going to become too physical, get too involved in Gashmias when they're in Eretz Yisrael. It's going to be bad. They only looked at the bad things. They saw tons of people dying. Tons of people dying all around them. Said there's funerals so that nobody notices the Meraglim around. What do they think to themselves? Oh man, it's killing everyone. Yep, the lamb's killing everyone. It must not be because we're about to come inside. And Hashem doesn't want us to fight too many people. Must be because the land is killing its inhabitants. One of the most ridiculous claims you've ever heard before in your life. But this something's able to convince you of anything. Once you start going, you might as well start going. That's the fifth one, really. Rav Kaplan has a great thing, but it's not so crazy. I'm telling you, you'll see it all over the place where the something does this to you all the time. When you wake up in the morning and you're sitting there, you got to get up for the 7:30 chakras. Is it 7:30? 7:25. 7:20? Somebody just say 7:25? Crap, do you still think it's 7:25?
And you're not.
At 7:20, you're sitting there at 7 o'clock and the Vekker comes in. The Vekker starts kicking you. And you're just like, yeah, I'll get up. The alarm goes off, you know, and there's a new alarm. We just saw it in the thing that's an LL, the thing that, you know, those cool toys that they all have. Oh, I showed this to me. Whoever made this up, I got to shake this guy's hand. That it is an alarm clock in which there's a little thing that flies up in the air. It starts flying around in the air, and the alarm starts going off, and it flies 6 to 9 feet away from the alarm clock. You have to chase it and put it back in the alarm clock in order to turn it off. Whoever thought of that is a genius! It's a genius! I've never heard such a cool move before in your life. If you go back to sleep after that, what is wrong with you? How could you possibly do that? I can never imagine. Like now, with the snooze button, okay, whatever. You know, like I have to keep my... I have like 7 alarm clocks, and they're all around the room. You know, I hide them so that I make sure I don't know where they are in the morning. You know, and that's the only way you get up. But you sit there, and there's something sitting to you, and the most ridiculous time is in the world. No, in order for you to learn better in morning study, you better go to the 8 o'clock menu. What? What are you talking about? No. I got a good one. Something will get up to you and say, like, you're not going to be able to concentrate during your davening. You better sleep another 5 minutes. You'll be fine. I'm telling you, it'll be okay. You're sitting there and you're like, yeah, that sounds good. That's good. How about 10? The most ridiculous time is in the world. And the stuff is able to get you with them. And you sit there and you're like, yeah, that sounds fine. All the time. And it's just when you go back to America, this is going to be classic. When you're getting back there and you're going on the plane, you could have down, you say to yourself, you know what? I'm going to try to be stark. I'm going to try to do this. I'm not going to watch any movies on the plane. Not going to watch any movies. Not going to watch them at all. And now I'll sit to you with that darn movie screen right in front of you, and you think to yourself, you know what? I'm not going to turn it on. I'm not going to turn that thing on. You'll be okay. And the person next to you and the person next to you are going to watch the two movies that you really, really wanted to see, and you'll be able to hear from the headphones that are sitting right next to you, just right next to you, because they'll be so blasting aloud because no Israelis ever know how to turn down volume. They'll be sitting there, and they'll be blasting it out, and you'll be listening to them, and you'll be like, oh, gosh, please help me. And you'll be sitting there, and it's all because you got that middle seat. That's why you ask for an aisle or a window. You know, and start walking around. That's the reason why. But you'll be sitting there and it'll get you. And the stuff will be like, come on. It's just a movie. It's not a big deal. You sit there and you're like, yeah, that's right. It's just a movie. It's okay. And then you get back and you're just like, yeah, come on. It's just, you know, another movie. What's the big deal? Yeah, it's just another movie. Come on. Just another call to the ex-girlfriend. I mean, come on. And then they'll give you excuses. What's that, the Blue Fringe song? Kavod HaBriot? Kavod HaBriot. You dump your girlfriend. Whatever happened to Kavod HaBriot? Kavod HaBriot? Are you joking? You come back and you're wearing a white shirt and jacket. Whatever happened to Kibbud Av Va'Em? Oh, that's a killer. All of a sudden, these mitzvahs start pulling up, and the something's pulling them out for you, and he's just like, come on, pin it in a pen. I mean, come on, you got to do that one. I don't see how you could possibly go to shul this morning. Those ridiculous claims, you're just like, that's right. And you just sit there. The most ridiculous, that's what happened to them. So when coming back, they wanted to bring an eshkol, the massive grapes, right? Now, Rashi says something crazy over here, and nobody catches it, because you sit there, and you're just like, yeah, 960 saw. And you're just, if you really know what a saw is, you go back to that and you're like, the grapevine was 960 saw? So they get that from the following. Yeshua, it says that each person was able to carry a rock 40 saws big. But if you have three people, each one can carry 40 saws together, so that each person could really carry 120 saw each. The grapevine was carried by 8 people altogether, so 120 times 8 is 960 saw. A saw is 6 kav. A kav is 4 lug. A lug is 6 basim. That's 144 eggs for every saw. And a saw, aside from that, I don't want to do it in eggs. It's something like 150,000 eggs. It's whatever, but nobody cares, because nobody ever seen 150,000 eggs. Whatever. I mean, I have. But a saw is 17 pounds altogether. A saw is 17 pounds. So if you do 960 saw times 17 pounds, it's 16,320 pounds. That's how much the grapevine was. Now, aside from the fact that maybe you could have found a smaller grapevine, 6'8" tons. That's how big it was. Just to put it in perspective, it's about four elephants. Four elephants. Now, I don't know if anybody's lifted an elephant before. I haven't. I've talked to them, but I've never, ever been able to lift up elephants before. It's whatever. It's an issue. I have absolutely no idea. It's a very, very big issue. It's a strange thing, but the Chidah says 960 is a very good call. Machlas and Lilith. Lilith are the two queens of the demons. Two queens of the demons. We're not going to go through them right now, how they come about. It's crazy stuff. By the way, it's really 968, but you add on the two names. I'm not going to go into how Gematria works and why you have to add on the two names, but suffice it to say, you have to add on the two names in this fort specifically. But it's 960. Either way, the Sultan made them carry something, which was being carried by Machlas and Lilith. By the way, 960 is all over the place. There are 960 Lugan and Mikvah, 960 hours for Moshe Rabbeinu when he was up in Har Sinai. There's a lot of stuff for that. The Meraglim also were 960 hours until the Eagle. The Meraglim traveled for 960 hours. When they hit that 960th hour, that was the bad thing. The Mi'am Louis says that grapevine knew what was going on, and it didn't want to go. The grapevine said to itself, like, I'm not going. I'm not moving. No matter how much they put weight on me, I don't care. I'm not going anywhere. So Yeshua and Kalev came by, because they were commanded from Moshe Rabbeinu to bring back fruits. So Yeshua and Kalev came by and lifted it up by themselves. 60,000 pounds. That's 8,000 pounds each. That's strong. That's big. So they picked it up. Kalev and Yeshua picked it up. All the Meraglim got really jealous, and they got angry. Why is it going up for you? So Kalev davened to Hashem that the grapevine should be picked up by the other Meraglim. So they threw it over to the Meraglim, and the Meraglim picked it up. They were able to carry it all outside. As they did that, Talmai, who was one of the three giants, Sheshai, Achiman, and Talmai, who were in Hebron, Talmai looked up and saw them. And he screamed at them and said, hey, where are you going with my grapes? Scared the life out of them, literally. All of them died. All of them died. All 12 Meraglim died. Sheshai, Achiman, and Talmai picked them up with their hands, blew air into them, and caused Chiyas HaMesim so that each one of them came back, and then calmed them down and told them, don't worry. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving you the land. We believe that Hashem is with you. Don't worry about anything. You guys will be able to conquer the land in a couple minutes. And yet still, the Meraglim were able to do what they did. Because they said, we understand, that sounds great and everything, but the fact is, we got great excuses. We got great claims. We got great tainas. That Sheshai, Achiman, and Talmai, and by the way, their reward was to live until the end of Chorban Bayis Sheni. They were able to live until the end of Chorban Bayis Sheni. And Yeshua, it seems to be a bit of a steer, but the Radak explains it. You can see the Radak over there. But they lived until Chorban Bayis Sheni all because of that. It's crazy what happened over here, but they mamish thought they had good reasons. They turned it around. They turned it around, and when they claimed over to everybody else, they started saying, they're not even afraid of us. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, when it says, Alu Zeb HaNegev, go up to the north, through the south and go up that way, toward Chevron. Zed always refers to something that you could point at. So question what Moshe Rabbeinu did. But either he did one of two things. Either he gave him a matah. He told him, take this matah. Anybody who comes anywhere near you, use the matah and he'll be struck dead. He'll die right there in front of you. Or it was a shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and a shame of God was given over to them that whenever they wanted to kill somebody, they could go ahead and kill them. The same way Moshe Rabbeinu was able to kill people, so too he was able to do they were able to do the exact same thing. So they brought it in. And even though they didn't need to use it, because there were no people that wanted to kill the Meraglim, nobody came anywhere near the Meraglim. But they said, even if they don't realize it, their mazel should have realized it. What happens in Megillah when Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah felt that Malach coming near them? Their mazel felt the Malach coming near them. They got scared because their mazel felt it, even though they didn't. So they said, where's their mazel? The Malachim are not scared of us. The Malachim are waiting for us to come and they're going to destroy us. We're going to be destroyed. They're not afraid of us. What are we going to do? To which Kalev said back, Sar Tzilam. The Malachim are all gone. They're dead. All the Malachim died. Everyone's all completely gone. Check out Rashi in the Pasuk. Everyone's completely gone. And that's what it means when it says, it's such an unreal Gemara. The Gemara in Sota Daf Yud Gimel. They said, Chazak hu mimenu. They're stronger than us. The Gemara says in Sota, Al tikri mimenu, ela mimenu. You're like, oh, now it makes sense. They say the pshat is, don't say it's from us, rather it's from Hashem, and it says it in a nice way. The Be'er Vasadis is an awesome board. Al tikri mimenu. It's a mistake in the Gemara. It's mimun. Don't be afraid of their mimun, the person that's in charge of them. Al tikri mimenu. They were afraid of the malachim that were all up there in charge of them. That's what they were saying. We're not going to be able to beat those malachim. We're never going to be able to go up against them because they're not scared of us now. We had a matah in our hands. We had the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they weren't moving away. All the giants were able to come up to us, and they were able to speak to us, and they didn't get scared. They got freaked out from that fact. How in the world are they not scared of us? What are we supposed to do? Kalev tried to knock them down by saying, no, they're dead. They're all dead. Hashem destroyed them already. So Hashem gave them an onesh. Hashem gave them an onesh. This is part of the last two things. Hashem gave them an onesh. One crazy onesh. I mean, their tongue hang out from their bodies, went all the way down to their stomachs. Worms came out from the top tip of the tongue and went all the way inside their stomachs. I don't know if anybody's had that before. It's not a disease I've ever heard of. Freaky. And if anybody watched it, that's not something you want to watch. It's not something you want to watch. It's one of those crazy, crazy punishments. Why is it so graphic? It is connected with the Egel Arufa. When you get to the Egel Arufa on Parshas Shoftim, there are crazy worms that come out from the dead guy, the guy that was killed and nobody knows who killed him. The worms come out from that dead guy and go and chase down the killer, take the killer and bring him over to Beis Din. Some say they choke the guy. Whatever, there are crazy worms that are like that. This is very, very similar to that sort of idea. You don't believe me. Check out the Yonas and Menuziel. It's an Egel Arufa. All right, whatever. This is Yaakov Radio also. That's all the song. Anyway, the fact is that these worms came out. Why does it have to be so graphic? It's the Ben Ish Chai. I have to bring in a Ben Ish Chai. Awesome story. Says there was a Maisa with a Gevir, a guy who was a very important guy in the town. He was a Gevir, and he did something wrong with an Eishes Ish in a building, and the building collapsed on both of them and killed them instantly. So when they undid all the rocks, they found them, obviously, having been doing what they were doing. He saw them exactly in that position. So they said, this guy's a Rosh HaGomer. He was over on Eishes Ish. How could he have done such a thing? This guy's a Mamish Rosh HaGomer, and they didn't want to give him a hesped. They didn't want to give him any, they didn't want to say Kaddish for him. God, I can't believe this guy did that. So Ben Ish Chai comes along, and they all are saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished the guy immediately for doing such a thing. The Ben Ish Chai says it was a Rav. Rav Echad is for sure referring to him. But he got up, and he darshaned in front of everybody around there, and said to them, sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not able to give us punishments immediately. He has to wait a little bit to see if we improve. But sometimes he does. And when he gives you the punishment immediately, it's always something so crazy that everybody can look at it and say, God did that. And when they look at it and they say, that must be God. God did that. They sit there and they say, wow, God is unbelievable. God can do anything. They sit there and they're mamish mispol from the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does everything in this world. Look how he punishes such Rishayim. That's how they go crazy. That's how he gets so sick. That's how he's so crazy. So on that, this guy who just died this way must be a tzaddik gomer. Because not everyone is zocha to have such a death. To prove to everyone that God is out there in the world. To show everyone God's power inside this world. This guy who died that way is there to show an example to everyone. To show everyone that he is a tzaddik gomer who only did this chait. He got a kapara of skila immediately. He got this kapara immediately. And he's going up to the highest level of Olam Haba. To show everybody how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates sin inside this world. That people should never ever sin inside the world. So too with the Meraglim. So too with the Meraglim. By the way, if you've ever seen a Gemara where it says, Rabbi Yochanan looked at him and turned him into a gal shalatamos, pile of bones. You see in that Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan looks at a guy and turns into a pile of bones. The pshat behind that is the exact same thing. The Rabbi Yochanan did that specifically to show you the power of Talmidei Chachamim. That what they can do is make the craziest miracles of all time, kill people, but not only kill them, in which they die in the ground. You can say it happened from natural causes. You know, it's a real killing, which the guy is a pile of bones on the ground, a pile of nothing, dust and dirt, to show everyone, look what I can do. Don't ever make fun of me ever again. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. And you think to yourself, okay, come on, like, what is it? Rabbi Yochanan was like that. You got to go through Rabbi Yochanan. That's another book that eventually, hopefully, somebody will write about. But Rabbi Yochanan is out there, unbelievable. Okay, regardless. Like, he needs my haskama. Like, oh, Jesus says he's good. All right, anyway. Either way, regardless. Thus, the Meraglim are tzaddikim gemurim. That's why we learned the whole idea behind a minion. Can you imagine? If we wouldn't have learned minion from the Meraglim, maybe we would have learned it from Parshas Korach and you need 250 men. Try getting that in an LL plane. There's no way. There's absolutely no way. 250 men, we would have learned it from that. Maybe we would have learned from 600,000. Maybe that's the only way to get a minion together. Where else would we have learned it from? We got it from them. They had a schus, a massive schus, to be able to sit there and say, we are the people who are going to teach you what a minion is, what an Ada is. They had great ideas. The Sata was able to nail them because they went at the wrong time and they weren't Moser Nefesh in the first place. But it was all Miriam's fault in the first place because of all the Lashon Hara she spoke about. But that wasn't her fault. It was from Eldon and Medad. But Eldon and Medad, it really wasn't their fault. It was from the Egel Zav. The Egel Zav is from the Erev Rav. Erev Rav is from Moshe Rabbeinu that brought them about because the Kadosh Baruch Hu said, if you want to see what Gerim are like for Klal Yisrael, check out the Erev and bring it about. And that's not Moshe's fault. Moshe was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he could do it. So it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's fault. Hakol yotze mimenu. Everything came straight back from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there's a reason why this all happened this way. Never ever think to yourself, oh, if only the Beis Mikdash would have been there and Mashiach would have been there. Never ever think that to yourself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a reason. It's why he's telling you that. Because he's trying to show you, look what can happen. One hate can mess everything over. One little thing that you think to yourself, what could this do? What did I do wrong? I did said one word that was extra. I did one thing that was wrong. That one thing can knock down everything. That one little thing can knock down everything. The last thing, that's why there's Zocha L'chai Olam Haba, according to the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Kuf Zayin. Last thing, Chassam Sofer, is such a crazy, crazy ending. The Mapilim, After the Meraglim happened, a bunch of guys got up, some say it was Tzlafchad, got up and said, that's it, we're going into Eretz Yisrael anyway. Moshe's like, guys, I've had enough today. Just like, this is a crazy Monday. I'm just like, listen, you can do whatever you want, but I just have to witness these worms coming out from nowhere, going up these guys' tongues and going inside their stomachs and bursting them. I'm not in the mood. I'm just not in the mood. Please, don't go up. You're going to die. They said, no, we're going up anyway. And they went up and they were killed. What is wrong with these people? Where are they going? What were they thinking? Why did they do this? And to say, there's a Gemara in Shabbos Daf Tzadi Zayin. The Gemara in Shabbos Tzadi Zayin says, Rabbi Kiva comes along and says, Slavkud was the Mekoshesh Eitzim. The Mekoshesh Eitzim is the guy who's collecting wood. He's the guy who's collecting wood. Comes along Rabbi Elazar and says, Rabbi Akiva, come on, stop speaking such, don't be motzi lies. Don't say that about Slavkud, that he was a Mekoshesh Eitzim and Chayiv Misa. Chas v'shalom, don't do that. He was one of them appealing. Rabbi Elazar, what are you saying? Mappilim is the exact same problem. You're calling him a sinner. What's wrong? Sam Sofer says, the pshat is, if you want to do tshuva for what they did, what did they do wrong? They didn't have a muna in a Kaddish Baruch Hu, that a Kaddish Baruch Hu can do anything. Can do anything. Even if it seems unlikely for them to win. They're going up against massive giants who are able to yell at you, kill you, and then bring you back to life by breathing in. You don't think that a Kaddish Baruch Hu can go up against those people. You don't think that can happen? The tshuva for that is be'oso dover, be'oso makom, be'oso zman. Get into the exact same situation and believe that God can do it. Go ahead into a situation where everybody's telling you, you won't be able to do it. You can't do it. There's no way you're going to be able to do it. And do it anyway. That's tshuva gemura in this case. So for these people were the mapilim. What they wanted to do was tshuva gemura. They went up to Moshe and they said, we want to go inside Eretz Yisrael. We think God can save us no matter what. Says Moshe, he's not going to do it. He's not going to save you. They said, we don't care. We know HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the power to do anything. If we really, really, really deserve it, he'll allow us to go inside. So no matter what you say, we're going in anyway to do tshuva gemura. If we die, we die. We're willing to do that because that's tshuva gemura for us. And we'll go straight to Olam Haba. If we live, then we'll see. We had tshuva gemura and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to go inside Eretz Yisrael. So let's try it. Let's try and we'll see. We're willing to sacrifice ourselves. Slavchad led them inside. Slavchad was willing to bring themselves inside. Bring everyone inside. And that's his name. Tzlof is a caper bush. Caper bush are crazy little bushes that have all these different types of berries, leaves, twigs. Everything is edible. I've never seen it before, and I don't think the sticks are really edible. Or at least not for us nowadays. There might be like little toothpicks. But the tzlof is supposed to be a plant that everything in it is edible. Everything is awesome. The shells of the seeds are even awesome. Everything is awesome. So for that, tzlof, chad, everything all is one. Put everything all together and everything points back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tzlafchad came back and showed everyone. There is something to this. There is something to this. Guys, let's go. Let's do tshuva gemara. Let's go back inside Eretz Yisrael and let's bring it all back. Let's bring it all back. They died, but they also went to Chai Olam Haba. They also got their Chai Olam Haba. They also went to the highest level for doing that tshuva gemara in a certain place. And each time, normally you're not allowed to do that. They say the classic example of tshuva gemara is when you do znus. You're supposed to put yourself in the same situation with the same lady, same time, same situation, same everything, and not sin. Don't do it. You're not going to do it. You're not going to do it correctly. But they were willing to do it because they knew they would do it correctly. They wouldn't run away. They'd be willing to go and fight, even though they knew they were going to lose. They were willing to go ahead and do that. These people are totally beyond any understanding. Beyond any of our understanding. For us to sit there and be like, we can understand the Meraglim, I've given you some shatim over here. There's tons others that I haven't said over, just that I've seen, and that's not including the stuff that I haven't seen. These people are totally beyond our understanding, totally beyond our Havana. And if you think that's just Nador Dea, think about the shatim. Think about the avos. To think that you can look at Avram Avinu and say, oh, I know what Avram Avinu did. Avram did a chet. Who are you? What do you mean Avram did a chet? For him to say Bama'ida, to call that a chet, when Moshe Feinstein and Drush Moshe says when the Ramban calls Bama'ida a chet, he says it's a forgery. It's a ziyuf. There's no way the Ramban could have said it, says Ramosha. No way. Absolutely no way. And even though Akiva Steinman, my old chavrusa, went ahead, and also one of the people who gave this shiur, when he went ahead and asked Rav Reuven Feinstein, he went up to Rav Reuven and told Rav Reuven, listen, I have a ksav yad, I've seen the ksav yad of the original Ramban, and it says it in there. It says it in that original ksav yad, so it must have been written by the ksav yad. Says Rav Reuven, no, it must still be a forgery. You don't know it was straight out from the Ramban. That couldn't have been written by the Ramban itself. It must have been written by somebody else. It couldn't be. Because according to Rav Moshe, there's no way you can say a certain thing about Avraham Avinu, to say Zachote, to say Moshe Rabbeinu, to say Yehuda and Tamar was something that you could just look at and be like, oh, they, he has Zona. What are you... No! Don't even go near there until you ask yourself 9 questions. But that's for Parshas Vayeshev. That's not for now. Don't even go near Reuven and Bilbo Yetzui Aviv. Reuven and Bilbo Yetzui Aviv is absolutely unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. To learn that Yehuda was in Cherem for 230 years because of what happened, and that Reuven wasn't happy for 230 years until Yehuda had the kapara. Absolutely unbelievable things to learn out from this. Where do we take it from there? I'm not big into Moser. I think everybody knows that. Well, everybody that's been in my shir before. I don't normally give Moser. But listen, this is... Now that I'm back, one of the main reasons why I went back to Chicago was in order to... I was tired of people going back to America and losing everything they had in Eretz Yisrael. Losing everything. By going one place and the next and whatever it is. Knowing that you can live in Eretz Yisrael, and I know it's now so much different with PSPs and everything that you can possibly get. But to go to live in Eretz Yisrael without a TV for a full year, to live in Eretz Yisrael, and basically to go to a movie will cost you more money than you're worth. Will cost you more money than you're worth just to get the cab there and then to go this and whatever. Just, it's not worth it. To go ahead for a full year and not do these certain things, to not go to a public beach, instead find private beaches or to find something, even though it's going to cost a little bit more money, to do certain things. The whole reason I went back to America is because I was sick and tired of people going back there, not having plans, just going there and being like, okay, I'll survive. I deal specifically with guys that are on college campuses that still went to yeshiva or somewhere that know how to learn, and these guys come in, and every day is a new test. The women on these campuses, thank God I don't have to go anywhere near them, the women that go on these campuses are wearing less and less clothing every single day. There's no reason for them to get dressed, because what do they care? And you're going on those. 100%, nobody here should ever have to use my program or any program that's anywhere similar to it. Everybody should be able to be in yeshiva for the rest of their lives, halavai, but obviously everybody has to go out and, you know, do something. Everybody has to go out and do something with their lives, but not everybody's set to learn yeshiva all day. But to go back with a plan, to write something down, I have written down still for my first year that I promised, even though it's not anything wrong, there's nothing wrong with it, I promised I would never ever go to a baseball game or a basketball game or a football game, even though I'm a massive White Sox and Cubs fan, but I'm a massive White Sox fan, massive Bears fan, massive Bulls fan, and when the Bears were going into the playoffs, it was very, very hard for me to keep myself away from everything and to not listen to it and to not find out what's going on with everything in the past year. It's shocking to me that a Kaddish Baruch Hu brought me back to Chicago and immediately all the teams start, White Sox win the World Series, Bears go to the Super Bowl. Sitting there, I'm like, some guy wanted to announce to the program, one of my guys said that we should announce, you know, join the program, your team will end up winning something. It's like, it's absolutely crazy, because like once a year, but like to go back there, it's to write it all down, and I still haven't broken it, and I'm not planning on it, to not do one thing, or two things, to just say to yourself, I'm not going to do this one thing, and it doesn't have to be anything huge, like not going to a baseball game, or not going to anything like that, you could do that, there's nothing really wrong with it, but to say to yourself, there's one thing that I know I did before, that I really don't want to do, whether it's, I don't know, not watching... Does anybody... Is Saturday Night Live still on? It is, right? Not watching the Apollo right after Saturday Night Live, you know? Like, by that time, you're just turning off the... Because why in the world did anybody watch the Apollo? It's just like sitting there. You know you're just too lazy. You don't want to turn the channel. The remote's over there. And you're sitting back. And you're just like... You know, and like Saturday Night Live put you in a dumb stupor. You know, it's like you're sitting there to just do one little thing. But not only to say to yourself that you're going to do it. Write it down. Put it in your wallet. Put it somewhere so that every time you look at it, you say to yourself, I'm going to do this. Whether it's learn for half an hour, get up for chakras, even if I'm a half an hour late. Get up for anything to do something. Make sure it's written down. And sometimes it's going to happen. You're going to break them. Sometimes it happens. Things like that happen all the time. Doesn't make a difference. You go right back into it. And if you have to revitalize yourself and redo yourself, well, that happens all the time. Sometimes you got to go back to Eretz Yisrael for a week and come back and just learn for a full week. Go to Kivrei Tzadikim. Just go around. Baruch Hashem, I was zocha to be able to come back for this week. There's a lot of things that I need to work on, a lot of things that I thought, Sundays, what are Sundays? Why in the world are people totally mevatel Torah in America on Sundays? You can do it here. You can do it. Why in the world is there nothing happening on Sundays? I can't get anybody to show up for a minute. I can get certain people. I have to do a totally different program for Sundays because nobody will come. It's got to be it's such a crazy thing. You all have Sundays here. You all did Sundays here. To say to yourself, I don't have to watch every NFL game that it's ever existed, or the pregame, or the pre-pregame, or ESPN2 that is the pre-pre-pregame, or anything that has the highlights from last week and then the highlights from this week, comparing the two, and which is more awesome, until you go on until 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're like, oh man, I got to get up for Shockwaves on Monday morning. Why? It's just, there's certain things that are out there, and you just sit there, and you're just like, I don't have to do them, so why bother doing them? To sit there and say to yourself just that, it's hard. It's really, really, really hard. But work on it. Write it down. It's the only way it's going to work. Write it down, and have it in your wallet, and do it. And that's all Kadosh Baruch Hu wants from you. He's not expecting everybody here to be Rebel Yashiv. He's the famous Rebbe Brazil Shmuz, but he's gone now. So nobody's expected to be Rebel Yashiv. You would have been born in Meisharim. You would have grown up like Rebel Yashiv. Nobody's expecting you to be like him. People are expecting you to be, I'm expected to be Tzvi Zimmerman. No one's expecting me to be more than that. I'm going to do just that, but I need help. So okay, write things down. Work on it. Daven. You have no idea what it's like going to the Kotel after not being there for 2 years. I mean, now you haven't. You know, but like, you sit there and you're just like, where was I? You know, what have I been doing? And nothing's changed. Aisha's still not there. You know, it's like, there's still construction everywhere. You know, it's like, it's all the same. But it's just different. You feel that touch and you're just like, there's something wrong. You know, it's just, you're missing something. To work on it. Just to be like, look, there's something out there. All right, guys, we'll stop with that. Have a great Shabbos.